All right, hello and welcome, everybody. Once again, this is the Spitballin' Podcast. I'm Ben Rogers from the Ben and Skin Show. He's Jamie Newberg from the world-famous Newberg Report, and we're ready to chop up a little Texas Rangers baseball for you today. Jamie, we're just about at the halfway point, depending on when somebody listens to this podcast, right around the halfway point of the season. Heck of a lot of positive for the Texas Rangers. Best start in franchise history. Things are going really, really well. However, we are nearing the trade deadline with a little bit of concern for the bullpen, maybe a full-on panic, depending on how recent a loss is. But how concerned are you with the usage in the bullpen and the need for reinforcements?
I don't know if concern – well, you know what? Concern probably is the right word, but I think it's an annual deal. You know, the good news is that the concern is – how do we get some of these guys right that we know can pitch at a higher level and a more consistent level? And it's not a situation where, man, how are they going to find someone who can get outs in the eighth and ninth inning? It's just a matter of getting these guys straightened out. And I think that most people feel like that the antidote there is to somehow back off of them a little bit. And that's tough to do, especially when it's sort of a double-edged sword, because when you have a team that wins as much as Texas, you know, right at the top of baseball in terms of games won, and very few of their wins have been blowouts, and there's as many close games as they take leads into the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning in, they're just having to really lean on these guys a ton. And what you'd like to see is a few, you know, 8-2 wins that that don't result in three guys getting on base in the eighth inning, and all of a sudden Jeff Banster feels like he's got to go to the main guys, and we just need more of those. Getting Keone Kello back will be great. He's going out pitching sim games now, probably rehab assignment soon, and maybe he's back by the All-Star break or so. Tanner Shepherds may be right behind him. I'm still convinced that there will be at least one major league reliever acquired now that we're in July. And yesterday we saw Fernando Rodney got traded by the Padres. And sometimes when you see the first domino fall, it leads to phone calls. You know, when you see a guy go off the board like that, teams are going to want to get in and make sure that there's not another two or three big-time relievers to get moved before they get in on the action. So I think that that's probably the priority now, is that the JD's on the phones talking to teams about pitching, both starting and relieving. And maybe the best way to fix this bullpen is just find out ways to have to lean on, you know, Dyson, Diekman, and Bush a little bit less than they had to in the first half.
Man, something I've been talking about a little bit on the show is you know, and I tend to panic a little bit or get irrational from time to time, but I look at what's going on with the Rangers at the catcher position, and I look at what's going on with the Rangers in the bullpen, and to me it's a little bit of mirrors, duct tape, and a fog machine. It's a little bit of magic, and it's somehow they're cobbling it together or whatever. You know, you see three catchers, and they're getting the most out of those catchers and fine production from the catcher's position. But none of those three guys are guys who are household names by any means. No, you know, I don't know that any of those three guys are necessarily ever going to have a realistic shot at even being mentioned for an All-Star game. You look at the bullpen, and yeah, I mean, even when it was Tolleson, it was a waiver claim closing. Or, you know, if it's Diekman, he's a throw-in in a deal. Or Dyson, he gave up nothing to get him. Or Bush, you found him in a, you know, Golden Corral parking lot. Not to take anything away from those guys, but the Rangers have been savvy and smart and just calculated and awesome to come up with, you know, to cobble those things together. But is it possible that to be at this point, to be this good, best start in franchise history, as something you've talked about with the Yu Darvish window, the Adrian Beltre window, is it maybe time now to say, you know, no, we're always looking at the long term and the short term, but things could be so good this year and next year that maybe it's time to stop cobbling something together. Maybe it's time to go ahead and trade prospects for your future window, to go ahead and get a big name closer to where you look down there and you know this game's over, or to go get, you know, a frontline catcher. And I don't know, to just kind of shore up those things as opposed to being savvy and super smart and tricky with that, go get something a little more reliable at those spots. What do you think?
Yeah, I think what's interesting here is if you look over JD's tenure, I don't think he has sort of a standard MO. You know, some years he's loading up for the big name, the Cole Hamels, the Cliff Lee. You know, other years he's looking for that piece that doesn't cost a whole lot just to shore up a spot, and it turns out, in many cases, turns out really well. And you've talked about, you know, how they've cobbled catcher together, and it's turned out to be, you know, a productive position. I don't think that we can ever rule out anything with JD, and I think your theory makes some sense, that there's some reasons to believe this year's a little different from the past 4 or 5 years, in that we know going into July that this team is going to be a playoff team unless something disastrous happens. This is not, hey, what do we do to put our foot on the gas in the second half to get into the playoffs? This is more, how can we be a better playoff team? And this is, obviously, it's a year to go for it, not just because of the Yu Darvish window and the Adrian Beltre window, but because this team positioned itself, you know, over the first 75 games to pretty much know that this is a year to go for it. It's not a situation where things have to fall right in, you know, August and September. Maybe this is the year that they decide that the farm system is so loaded right now, it's worth for a second straight July to take a bunch of names out of that first and second tier and load up and go get a difference maker, whether that's on the pitching staff or in the lineup somewhere, you know, more likely pitching. But yeah, I think that's certainly, if nothing else, it's part of the discussion up on the fourth floor, you know, if that's the way they want to go this year. And they definitely have the ammunition to do it.
Yeah, you talk about ammunition. One of the most coveted pieces that they have, you know, of all the young players they have, and a lot of them are already contributing in a big way in the majors, but maybe one of the most coveted pieces is Joey Gallo, who, you know, could be MVP potential if he hits his ceiling. This is a guy who's still down in the minors, still trying to figure it out after struggling last year. And he's had to ride some pine lately. There were some disciplinary situations, and they had to kind of sit him a little bit. I can't really tell exactly what's going on there. Again, I'm not that dialed into what's happening in AAA. But what do you think's going on with Joey Gallo? I'd just love to get your overall temperature on what's going on with him now and what you think his value is and what you think his future is.
Well, I do think there's been a minor heel issue that's affected his playing time. There was evidently a period of time, maybe a week, couple weeks ago, where I don't know if it was a hustle issue or something else, where they did sit him down, which seemed more like a message benching. But I do think that since then, there's reportedly been a little bit of a tweak in one of his heels that's kept him out of lineup every day. I mean, he hasn't been shut down. You know, whatever the reason is that they're sitting him a little bit, It's not a long-term issue. I don't know if you've kept up with what's going on in Philadelphia, but Nick Williams, who may have been the key to the trade for Cole Hamels as far as the Phillies were concerned, he's been benched several times over the last month, apparently for not running out fly balls and things like that. And part of minor league development is tough love from time to time, and making sure that if there are, you know, occasional issues of a guy playing hard in the situation where he may feel like he should be in the big leagues and not down on the farm, that, you know, that they get that out of the player system. And, you know, development's more than just mechanics. And so that may be what's going on with Gallo. Obviously, the organization still has extremely high hopes for him. And he's had a very good season statistically. He just hasn't had the same opportunity that Mazar has gotten, that Profar has gotten. You know, it's a lot of it depends on where in the big leagues you need help, and you don't want Gallo to be up here. You know, it was one thing when he came up for those 4 or 5 days and got one at bat. That didn't really stunt his development. What you don't want is to have Joey Gallo on your bench, you know, indefinitely as a bench piece that gets in the starting lineup once or twice a week. That's not good for development if it's a long-term situation. So he's going to keep getting his at-bats down there, playing some third, playing some first, until there's a need up here for him to play virtually every day. Otherwise, we may not see him until September. And, you know, teams are still going to be asking for him in the meantime. I doubt he's traded unless the discussion is at such a high level in terms of a Chris Sale or Jose Fernandez, and, you know, those teams still believe they're in a race. So I doubt those kinds of pitchers are going to become available. But if one of them does, then, you know, maybe Gallo or any number of other top-tier prospects are in the discussion.
Is it possible, and I ask you this because of, you know, your knowledge of the minor league system of the Texas Rangers and in general, is it possible that they could go out, the Rangers could go out and fortify their bullpen, maybe even find a controllable starter, just really have a successful trade deadline and still hold on to Gallo and Profar?
Well, of course, because they did it last summer. Obviously Diekman cost a lot because he was part of the Hamels deal, but if you look at the Dyson trade, and right now I think everybody would agree that Sam Dyson, despite a little hiccup in New York, is the team's best relief pitcher. You know, the best relief pitcher on maybe the best team in baseball was acquired for two prospects that were not in the Rangers' top 20. That's a fluky deal. You can't expect there to be another, you know, Tomas Tolis and Cody Egee trade for a reliever that becomes your best guy in the late innings. That was a master stroke. You got to give the Rangers credit for scouting the player and seeing that if he would throw the sinker more, he'd be even more effective than how the Marlins were using him. It was a great deal. You can't expect that, but can you expect that through good pro scouting, you can go find a relief pitcher that can fit in here in the eighth inning to give the other guys a little bit of a break without touching Gallo or Brinson or Tate or Ortiz or Profar, guys like that? Of course. I mean, they've demonstrated that they've got that ability to find that kind of pitching help. If you're talking about going to get, you know, a Chapman or an Andrew Miller or someone, you know, at that level, different story. Let's talk about something kind of in the middle of those two extremes. When the Padres traded Fernando Rodney, they got one low-A pitcher from the Marlins. Very good low-A pitching prospect. He's regarded much more highly than either Tolis or Egee was last year for Texas, but he's not at the level of a Tate or Ortiz in terms of his prospect value. So could you part with Yohander Mendez or Ariel Jurado or Ryan Cordell or, you know, prospects at that level, maybe tier two, even tier three for this team that could be a top 10 kid somewhere else, to get a, you know, a legitimate established late inning reliever? Possibly. I mean, you're not going to get one of the Yankees guys with prospects like that, but there may be somebody out there. Like, if Sean Doolittle didn't get shut down in the last couple of days with a shoulder issue, someone like that, you know, a guy that's had closing experience that may not be closing anymore, or maybe who is closing but isn't considered one of the five best in baseball, maybe you can get a guy like that without having to touch that top tier.
Man, one of my favorite things about baseball is just how you have reams and reams of data that are supposed to make it easy to predict what's going to happen, and then it's so incredibly hard to predict what's going to happen. And, you know, in that regard, you look at Ian Desmond, and he's here on a pillow contract, and you're like, okay, Ian Desmond, okay, they got him for steal. He's going to move positions. That's going to be difficult. He'll be a placeholder for Lewis Brinson. Well, what's happened is Lewis Brinson has regressed a little bit, or has not really stepped up and look, you know, he just doesn't look ready. I don't think anyone thinks Lewis Brinson's ready to play center field next season for the Rangers. And at the same time, Ian Desmond has exceeded all reasonable and even unreasonable expectations. He's been incredible. And I know we've talked about it on other Spitball and podcasts, but have you been given any thought to what it would take to keep Ian Desmond, and if there's any way to do it at all?
I've given a lot of thought to that, and I think it's one of the maybe the number one mystery right now is in terms of, man, I would love to be a fly on the wall to hear the, you know, internal conversations about center field, because there's absolutely no reason aside from budget to even consider walking away from Ian Desmond. Obviously, the budget issue is a big one, so that's the hurdle to clear. Ownership here has demonstrated time and time again, and you guys have talked about it on your show, that when they say, "Hey, we're at the payroll level that we feel comfortable with, and we're not going to exceed it necessarily," they then go ahead and exceed it with the right opportunity. In signing Desmond in the first place, you know, for the 1 year and $8 million, after camp had already gotten underway, they stepped out of their box to do that. This is a bigger commitment. We're talking about probably a 5-year minimum deal that Desmond knows he can command on the open market, especially now there's no longer defensive questions, because he might have regressed a little bit at shortstop past couple years. As a center fielder, he looks like a premium defender, and obviously he's been a premium producer at the plate this year. He is a 80 grade clubhouse guy, athletic enough to where you look at his age and you may not predict the same sort of breakdown at certain ages that you might with other players. There's so many reasons to envision him with this team going forward, but the money is key. And to sign him, even stepping out to do so, you'd probably need to move a contract, either Chu, Fielder, or Andrus, and subsidize any one of those three contracts a little bit, so you'll be paying them down in order to trade them. The Brinson question is interesting. I'm not sure, regress is probably the right word statistically, but he's also had injury issues, and he's dealing with one right now. He's rehabilitating and trying to get back into the Frisco lineup, which should happen fairly soon. He's got a chance, obviously, in the second half to be the player that he was last year. I don't think I don't think his star has fallen, although he may not be on the same bullet rise that he was last summer. But that's a huge question. Do you still envision Brinson as your center fielder of the future? And I think they feel comfortable that he's a starting big league center fielder within the next year or two. But the flip side of that is, do you consider using him as a premium trade chip? And if you do that, it's a pretty strong signal that you're ready to commit, or at least talk to Ian Desmond about the possibility of staying here long term.
Man, I'd love it. It is a mystery. You're right, and it's a bit of a conundrum when you look at how do you project what he's going to do. I mean, is he the hitter he's been the last 3 or 4 years, or is he the hitter he is now? Has something clicked? Has a light bulb gone on? I mean, how do you project forward what type of hitter he's going to be? I do look at this, though. There is one thing I look at with Desmond. I've heard some people raise some concern and say, okay, you're going to pay an athlete. If you decide to keep Ian Desmond, you're paying a guy who's a phenomenal athlete, speed, burst, quickness, athleticism, a huge part of who he is. Well, Father Time's undefeated. So, of course, those areas of his game are going to regress over time. He's going to pull back. He's not going to be as athletic. He's not going to have the burst. That's where I like the versatility, because his ability to play shortstop in the majors – I mean, basically, to me, if you can play shortstop and center field, you basically can play anything but catcher and pitcher. I mean, that said, as he gets older, that's a guy who, even if you commit to him long term, if he can continue to hit, you love what he does for the clubhouse, and you could play him at third or second or first or basically wherever you needed to play him. Is that a safe way to look at it, too?
I think so, and I think that maybe the position that you're leaving out of that is left field. If 2 years from now he's lost a step, but he's still hitting the ball, you can move him to a corner if that's how things shape out, and he can still be, an excellent defender without having to cover so much ground. I still think, and this is just based on his, body type, you look at him, and he just seems to me to be the kind of guy that when he's 34 years old, he's still going to be playing at a level that other 34-year-olds won't be, because he's lean, and he's got a good first step. He's not a guy that relies on, he doesn't lumber out there. And I don't want to insinuate that Josh Hamilton was a guy that you couldn't project in center field long term, because his situation is so much different because of his vulnerability to injury. But you look at Josh Hamilton's body type, and he did look like, even if healthy, that by the time he got to his mid-30s, he wasn't going to be a center fielder anymore, because he carries so much weight. And it was good weight. But Desmond's a different body type. And I think you can, if you were to sign him to a 4 or 5 year deal, I think you could feel pretty good about the first two, maybe three, in terms of him being able to cover center field at a premium level. And then the back end of the contract, you could move him to a corner out there. And like you said, he could also fill in anywhere in the infield if need be. Not that you would project within 4 or 5 years that he'd be a bench guy, but he'd have that versatility if any issues were to arise in terms of his ability to stay at a defensive position up the middle.
Well, I know this is the favorite podcast of Rangers ownership, so I know they're listening right now, and based on what we just said, I know they're going to step up That part might not be true about them listening to this podcast. But, Jamie, dude, I love doing this podcast. I love talking baseball with you. I'm glad we get to share it with other people. This has been the Spitballing Podcast. Please listen to it, subscribe to it, share it on social media. Tell your fellow Ranger fans to tune in for it. And until next time, happy baseball, everybody.